you know, sometimes farming can be a thankless profession. You're doing a lot of hard work. It's not very financially rewarding. You're not going to get any like awards for being out there in the field usually. But for us, like the birds that are here, those are our trophies. Those are the things that tell us you're doing something right. You're a good steward of the land.
Welcome to the 371st installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Any doubt whether the owners of Keewaydin Farms see birds as an integral part of their agricultural enterprise flutters away once you pull into their driveway. There, rising above the former milking parlor that now serves as a vegetable packing shed, is a concrete silo sporting a colorful mural featuring a metal ark and other avian residents of the area. And behind the silo is a birding trail that winds its way through the hilly, driftless terrain here in southwestern Wisconsin. Spend any time talking to Joy Miller and Rufus Hockey, and it's clear the farmers see birds as not only a pleasant distraction, but as an important way to keep insect pests in check naturally. But most importantly, when they see a metal ark, bluebird, or northern harrier winging around their property, it's a sign that they are succeeding in their efforts to steward this land in an ecologically balanced manner. In April, I had a chance to see firsthand how birds fit into Rufus and Joy's farming goals when they hosted a Wild Farm Alliance field day on how to support beneficial birds on the farm. The event featured presentations on building nesting boxes, the role birds can play in controlling pests, and what programs are available to establish bird-friendly habitat on the farm. The highlight of the day was a hike on that birding trail, where participants spied a northern harrier, an eastern meadowlark, various sparrow species, a goldfinch, and a ruby-crowned kinglet, among others. Joy literally yelled out in delight when she saw an eastern bluebird emerge from one of the nesting boxes that the farmers have erected along the trail. Keewaydin Farms has been in the Hockey family since 1976, when Rufus's parents started a dairy there. In the early 2000s, Rufus came back to the farm and started an organic vegetable operation. This marks the 21st year that Keewaydin has been marketing its production via a community-supported agriculture enterprise, as well as by selling wholesale to area co-ops and restaurants. A recent addition to the farm is a flock of sheep, which helps them add value to the perennial forages that have replaced row crops and small grains over the years. In 2021, the farmers launched Driftless Curiosity, a 501c3 educational nonprofit that, besides holding community events, offers on-the-land classes in maple syruping, foraging, gardening, wellness, and food preservation, among other areas. And it goes without saying that Driftless Curiosity also offers sessions on birding. After the field day, Joy talked to me about the role birds play, not only in their farming operation, but in her and Rufus's quality of life. She made it very clear that she does play favorites when it comes to birds and doesn't see creating a so-called landscape of fear on the farm as necessarily a bad thing. We started our conversation with a simple question. Why birds? So Joy, we just had a great field day here where you and Rufus kind of explained how you've integrated wildlife habitat into your farm a little bit. And then we went on a great bird walk. It was a really nice circuit here. It's obvious that they have become an important part of this working farm. The farm, I think you said it's around 200 acres. Yes. Is that correct? And you're raising vegetables on, say, 4 acres, something like that. Yes. So you have a lot of land that is not tied into your main moneymaker, which is your vegetable operation. So it sounds like there was a point where you And this was always a conservation farm anyway. You wanted to take care of the land, but you really wanted to tie in habitat restoration and whatever. And it sounds like birds have kind of been a real important linkage. Can you talk about how did birds become something that you just really became? I mean, you've got a mural of birds on your silo.
That's right.
I don't know, it's a hummingbird, and I don't know what all is it.
Metal ark on there.
Metal ark. And
goldfinch.
Yeah, goldfinch. So it's like if there's any doubt when somebody pulls into the driveway that birds are important. But why birds? There's other things maybe you could have drawn out there, but birds really seem to be really key for you folks.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. One, my husband and I joke that like once you turn 40, somehow birds just like pop into your consciousness and you're like, wow, they're so beautiful. And you have like more of appreciation reason for them. I think another reason is, you know, after 20 years of organic farming and having a lot of diversity on the farm, the birds just showed up. And because we spend most of our day outside, we're with the birds every day. Yeah. And so there's a lot higher frequency of noticing the birds, noticing the song, seeing the patterns of migration and nesting and breeding season and the fledging. And so I think just like being outdoors all the time and recognizing that these are our partners in the field. They're helping with pest protection. They're eating lots of pests that otherwise eat up our crops. And they provide this beautiful soundscape that I think is very calming to the mind. I talked a little bit about how at the Moses Conference, Marble Seed Conference, we presented about our bird-friendly farming. And one of the topics I like to talk about is how birds impact our mental health. And there's research that shows, you know, our existence with birds goes back to this like primal calming effect of that when birds are singing, there's typically not a predator around. If there is a predator or some danger in your area, the birds will either go silent or they're giving a warning call. They're not doing that melodious love song type singing. And so our brains just associate that with safety. And so I think I can feel that as well out in the field. You wake up, you come outside, you hear birds singing, and that kind of sets the stage for your day. It sets the stage for I'm safe, the animals around me are happy, the wildlife is satisfied, and it really gives you a feeling of comfort and safety and beauty. Yeah. And the land.
I think that's a super important point because, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the practical benefits you've seen from birds, but the quality of life, I mean, that's something that's ignored so much in farming, and it's one of the reasons a lot of people don't continue farming, frankly. But that's, I think that's great that it sounds like about the same time you recognize some of the practical benefits, you recognize these kind of peace of mind or quality of life issues that were really important to you.
That's right.
Do you recall at all, like when you first, I mean, some of the first birds that you noticed that, you know, they're always kind of here, but you just really started noticing them and going, oh, and then there's a certain kind of habitat that they're using, that kind of thing. Do you remember anything like that?
Yeah, I think that the Eastern Meadowlark, I have to just point to them. They are here now. They're coming strong on the land during spring migration. They have such a beautiful song, and the yellow on their wing really catches your eye. So they catch your eye, and they catch your ear. And I learned about them probably when we first started Driftless Curiosity about 5 years ago. And I learned that they were on the conservation priority list for Wisconsin. And for me, I was like, wow, like this is it. We're doing conservation. We have this bird here and we need to take care of it. Like it's picking this as its nesting ground. It's hanging out here. It's returning. And so we just wanted to do everything we could to keep it coming back. And so we've, you know, altered our hay cutting. We're working on prairie. We're planting more oak trees. We're doing all kinds of oak trees, not so much for the meadowlarks, but yeah, we just really wanted to keep them coming back. And seeing people's excitement when they visit the farm and see meadowlarks is really such a like sparkle in my own experience, because people just light up. They love that song. They love seeing birds that are more rare. To know that, oh, this bird has a home is comforting for people that care about birds.
Yeah.
And so being that steward on the land for that specific species has really been a joy for both of us.
Yeah, it sounds like you were like, well, if this bird cares enough to show up on our land, we kind of owe it something a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And Rufus talks about, too, his experience of cutting hay and how it was very heartbreaking for him to see, oh, there's a nest I just ran over, and you can see the bird get chopped up. You can see the whole thing go down. And he just couldn't do it anymore. He knew that they were a bird at risk, that they were a conservation priority, and he's like, I can't do it. I can't chop these things up. It's not in good conscience farm this way. And so we started, and we're still continuing to kind of evolve our strategy for taking grass off the land, whether it's late cutting or leaving half the grass or using grazing strategies to keep those grasslands healthy for these birds.
Yeah, speaking of grazing, you've, I think, recently introduced sheep to the operation. And so that's a way to maybe harvest that land or that grass in a way that you're not going to be going through with a machine and getting rid of all that habitat. I talked to Caitlin earlier from the Audubon Society about how they've really started to recognize the role rotational grazing can play in creating that that mosaic of habitat that, yes, that's out there a little bit. So that sounds like that's been an important piece too.
Yeah, absolutely. We added sheep 4 years ago. This is my third year of lambing, and so we're up to 25 sheep. We use all of our own hay. We don't buy in any hay. We like to keep it sustainable, closed-loop feeding system here for the hay and grass anyways. We just were able to get a bunch of mobile fencing set up. So last year I started experimenting with rotational grazing, and this year I feel that we have enough pasture built and mobile electronet fencing available that we can really do a good job of keeping them moving, not just for the grass, but for the animals as well. They stay a lot healthier, their parasite load is much lower, and they're just overall happy when they're on new grass. And you keep them moving, so they don't have to eat it down to a nub. They keep it tall. It's a beautiful thing to see animals on pasture.
Oh, yeah, especially in the driftless area. It's just something about it. Can you go back a little bit to, so I know you still do some haying, but do I have this right? You've changed a little bit your haying system to kind of accommodate the birds, and can you talk about, is there some other things you've done to kind of help that habitat a little bit?
So we want to do some more diversity planting in the fields out there, so we've applied for some NRCS funding, so we have some more diversity out there for the birds. And apart from the planting, the cutting style has been pretty much just waiting until super late to cut.
Yeah.
One nice thing about sheep hay is it doesn't have to be super high quality like a dairy animal. Like the cows really need, or horses really need, a very specific type of hay, and sheep can kind of survive off lower quality hay. So we're able to do a late cutting to, it, usually not until August. Sometimes we've cut in September. So we want to really wait until after those birds have raised their young. You still get a few in those late cuttings, but they've had a chance, you know, at least to fledge the nest before you go in and cause a disturbance. Oh, and I learned another strategy for cutting hay that was to help birds. And it was, so you drive to the middle of the field and cut outward. So that's why, that way the birds have a place to flee to.
Right.
So I've heard that strategy too, is if you cut in a certain pattern in working out, that the birds can get away.
Wow. Oh, cool. And in general, it sounds like just kind of an overall on a landscape level, you're doing everything you can to, I assume when this was a dairy, especially probably you had row crops, that kind of thing. And this is such hilly land anyway, right, not the best for soil, you know, even if you're using really good conservation practices. You're trying to keep anything that'll keep a perennial cover on that the land other than your vegetable operation as much as possible.
Yeah, that's right. We used to grow more like small grains, a little bit of corn, things like that. And we're up on a ridgetop. The slope is just, you know, you can prevent some of that with contour stripping and stuff, but it wasn't like necessary for us. And we just decided to put it all in perennial grasses and just do hay because we were seeing some erosion and, you know, disturbance of the soil and things like that, that we were like, there's enough people growing corn and small grains. And, you know, it's a whole nother system of equipment and storage and things. So we just really focus on the veggies now and leave that land untilled.
Talking a little bit about you, and you kind of alluded to some of the practical benefits of the birds. And one of the things as we were wrapping up on the bird walk, we could see the sheep there. And you talked a lot. You felt like maybe the flies that's been an issue, that you've been able to kind of reduce the impact on the sheep of flies as a result of birds?
Yes, absolutely. And I just sort of witnessed this, and then we're fortunate to partner with Wild Farm Alliance and, you know, talk research with them. And they confirmed that there were some studies in Italy, some research done on fly pressure. This was for cattle, not sheep. Specifically, they looked at barn swallows, and the presence of barn swallows reduced the fly pressure on the animals. And so not only do they eat a lot of fly and larvae, they also make a lot of disturbance. So they cheep, they fly, they build nests, they're swooping around. You can hear them.
Yes, we can hear them here.
And the wording they used was these birds create a landscape of fear for the flies. And so I've noticed that in the back pasture where there's a lot of barn swallow nests and also English sparrows, there's a lot less flies than my front pasture where there was, you know, they grazed heavily and now there's just lots of flies up there. There's still some birds, but in this back area where there's a lot of grain, because I feed grain in late gestation and early lactation to the sheep, the presence of grain really brings in those birds, as well as fresh water. So you've got buckets of water and water troughs, and they love to check out the water. And so they're here in mass quantities. And I have never had a case of fly strike. A lot of shepherds deal with that, and it's a very difficult thing to see your animals go through, to have maggots or infections and things like that from fly strike. Is just really hard on the animals, it's hard on the farmers. You can have animal loss, you can have high vet bills. And so one of the things mentioned in this research was, I think it was a 30% reduction on the fly count, and then they tied that to a dollar amount that it saved the farmer in vet bills, animal loss, things like that, medication. Yeah. So these birds are really, even the birds some people might consider pest birds, like, oh, barn swallows, they make a big mess, they're in my rafters, or even English sparrows, they're not my favorite bird, but I see them working for me in one way or another. And, you know, I even last year experimented with not docking tails, because most of the reason people dock tails is a management issue of fly strike. And I didn't dock tails last year, and I still have had no fly strike. I've allowed them to keep their tails. I think it gives them a little more protection because they can whip their tail, where if you have a really short bob tail, there's not much disturbance they can cause the flies on the back end. So I feel that, like, by allowing them to have their natural tail, by having the birds around, by having rotational grazing, like, they can keep their tail and still avoid fly strike. And it's a really cool symbiosis to see evolve in the flock. The flock of birds and the flock of sheep.
I forgot that they it's the same thing. Both flocks. Is there any other kind of, I hate to focus on the practical too much, but is there any other practical benefits that you've seen with the birds? I mean, is there anything, as far as even the vegetable operation, is that something that, that you're able to just notice?
You know, the pest pressure, for sure. We don't use any chemicals, like even the organically approved chemicals we don't use. They're expensive. They're still broad spectrum insecticides, so we don't use any. So our birds are our pest reduction. And so we lean on them, and I see them eat. You know, I watch them feed their nests. I see how often they're taking insects out of the field. And so that is a huge boom for us. When you don't have the tools of the chemical side, you have to lean on the natural side. And there are our natural pest protection. And I think this isn't on the CSA or farming side, but we also have a camping business. So we have 8 rustic campsites, and we get a lot of birders that camp out here. And we have advertised, you know, you'll probably see meadowlarks, you'll see, you know, kind of have a bird list. And we've attracted a lot of people to camp here just because of the presence of the birds. They want to see, you know, spring migration, fall migration, and it's brought us some camping business, very birder-specific camping. So there's not a lot of places that people can go camp, hang out in a quiet rural place, and just, like, there's hiking trails, you can picnic. And so opening up the space for people to just camp, even have a day trip, and experience the birds, we're kind of becoming known as a place for that. So.
Yeah, well, this is my bias, but I think it's important that they see that it's on a working farm, too.
Yeah.
The wildlife refuges are great, wilderness areas are great, all of that, but in the Midwest, privately owned farmland is such a big aspect of the landscape. So I think it's important for people who are interested in the environment and birding and wildlife, that kind of thing, to see that, they aren't mutually exclusive, working farm and healthy environment kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, sometimes farming can be a thankless profession. You're doing a lot of hard work. It's not very financially rewarding. You're not going to get any, like, awards for being out there in the field usually. But for us, like, the birds that are here, those are our trophies. Those are the things that tell us you're doing something right. You're a good steward of the land. You're a good enough steward that birds that need very specific habitat are showing up here. We saw the northern harrier today. They need wide swaths of grassland. And we saw Henslow sparrows. They're very particular on the habitat they want to see. And other birds on the conservation priority list, the meadowlarks, the bobolinks we'll see, sometimes bobwhites, red-headed woodpeckers. Those are all birds in decline, birds that need support. And so for them to be here, their presence alone is like, that's our stewardship award, is that they're here.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good point in that it's a, they're a way of you to kind of gauge the success of what, if you see a certain bird, you're like, oh, okay, what we're doing is we're doing the right thing here.
Yeah, absolutely. And to see the long arc of it over, you know, my husband's been here 20 years doing organic farming, and he's just seen a huge increase in the increase of the species, the diversity, the numbers, and just the sole act of keeping chemicals off the farm has made this an oasis.
Speaking of which, you were talking a little bit about it's fun to bring people onto the land to do camping or birding or just day trips to see. I've referred to this before, but we did this bird walk, and it was obviously you have your nest boxes set up. And right off the bat, we saw a northern harrier. And we saw, I'm trying to think, we like you said, Henslow sparrow, there
Eastern
was
meadowlarks, Eastern meadowlarks,
Eastern bluebirds.
Well, I want to talk about the bluebirds, sure. Because you yelled out, so I knew you were excited, because you weren't sure if this one nest box was actually being a home to English sparrows, which everybody hates English sparrows, you know, they've got their role, but
yeah.
You were so excited to see that bluebird, we had about 25 people. People, that must be really fun to kind of introduce people and for them to see that cause and effect, that like, okay, what we're doing here is working for these birds, like a bluebird, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a collaborative effort, too. It's like us as farmers and then these organizations like Wild Farm Alliance and SARE, who's supporting this, and the volunteers who build the boxes and the people that provide the lumber. And all of this comes together to provide a bird a home. And it's just so beautiful to see it when it all comes together. It's a moment of joy. It's a good feeling.
Do you have a favorite birding experience on the farm that you can think of?
Okay, one morning we were doing a birding workshop, and Barb Dirksen, who's our local birding expert, came in, and no one else saw this bird, but her and I saw a scarlet tanager right above us in the pine tree, and neither one of us had seen one in a long time. And it was just like, nobody else was here, nobody else saw it, but Barb and I saw it, and we know that it was a confirmed sighting. And it was just like, in that moment, we just connected, and we were so happy, and like our love for the birds was there. It was this like just this really sweet, when you see something rare and precious and protected, it's a moment. It's like a thrill. It's like
you'll have that
adrenaline junkie for birds.
Well, you know, there's worse things to be an adrenaline junkie for.
Right.
Well, and you didn't have to have a picture of it. You have that burned into your I can tell.
Yeah.
You're taking me back to that day. So that must have been really, really exciting. And that, like you said, that's something that, again, it chose to be your farm as its home. So that just, it must be almost flattering. It's like, well, we're doing something right here. So I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is your favorite bird?
I will say the Eastern meadowlark, because I love their song. I love their flashy yellow. I love how many there are here. I love that they're grassland, and we do all we can for the grasslands. And so I got to say the Eastern meadowlark. They're my melodious little yellow-winged friend.
They seem so friendly.
Yeah, they've got a real friendly song.
Well, and to be on a more serious note, I mean, that is a serious note. I think I don't want to belittle that, but also they are so dependent on healthy perennial grasslands.
Yes.
And so it's another sign that you're doing something right when you see. Yeah. And so it is a win-win because you enjoy seeing it, but also it's just like, oh, we are doing the right thing here.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, it's when we see our first one of spring, it's like it's a mile marker for the start of the season. It's like, okay, spring migration. And we talk about the crescendo of birdsong on the land in early spring. And it coincides with the time that we as farmers are also coming out of hibernation and starting to migrate from our indoor life to our outdoor life and spending most of our days outside. And so they really are our constant companions. That birdsong, those sightings, it's just a really sweet slice of life for us when that comes back.
Is there like a bird that you've like, oh, I'd love to see this. I've heard that they're around, but I haven't seen it.
Telling me today, purple martins.
Oh,
yeah. He said that he's had boxes out, and he had one last year and now has two. And so I would love to. I don't know if we have enough water really here for that, but any bird I haven't seen, I like to see. I like to keep adding to my list.
Ear to the Ground, episode 370, featured a discussion about a program for livestock producers who want to get their grazing operations certified as bird-friendly. A future podcast will feature the Wild Farm Alliance, which is helping farmers like Joy and Rufus integrate natural habitat into their agricultural enterprises. For information on blending wildlife and working farmland, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 371 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.